Welcome, listeners, to time four in awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. And listen to the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app, especially to your handheld devices. You can download that TuneIn app, and in the search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. Again, that's Time for Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media home base is there also. It should be one of your favorites. If not, make that one of your favorites. It's timeforawakening.com. We'll take you straight to Time for Awakening Media, where you'll see more interesting content and podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at a later time, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, it's Friday here in the city of Philadelphia. And we're in open forum this evening. No guest scheduled. Well, you're the guest. And the special guest is you, the listening audience, in an open forum setting. So give us a call. Anything on your mind, we'll talk about it. And again, that contact number is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at Time for an Awakening at gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American History and Cultural Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us on the line. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
How you doing there, brother?
Brother Rich?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you now.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying hi into the listening audience. Tonight seems another one of those energizing moments. We're now into the month of August, at the beginning of the most, supposedly in some places, probably we're going to get another heat wave. But, you know, Elliot, there's going to be something going on in this month towards the end. 21st is supposed to be did we call it a solar eclipse that is going to happen? They say it's one of those phenomena at a time, but it usually happens kind of regularly. But it'll be we should be able to see some portion of it here in North America where the moon blocks out the sun for a bit and put us in a moment of darkness.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Okay. Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I think a portion of our people have been in a moment of darkness for quite a while, but, it's a lot of things happening now.
I thought you was going to say that.
No, well, it's
no, like, and you know what, Elliot, I was thinking the same thing, and that's why, I take it that you named the program Time for Awakening, because out of that, the darkness of the sleep, you open your eyes and you see some light. And when you see the light, you can be able to know where you're going and what kind of moves you have to make. And we definitely seem like we're in a time where we have to make some moves. No more than different at any other time, but definitely just as vital and important.
Yeah, I don't think our situation been any different since we've been here, but it's always times where it's a good time to make a move. Mm. And, I mean, this is just my opinion. I think that we live in times where it's a good time. It's an opportune time to start making some serious moves. And this is another time in history where it's an opportune time to make serious moves. I mean, you know, for the past 8 years leading up to this new administration, if you're looking at it from a political lens, I think our people was kind of lulled. Some of our people were lulled to sleep dealing with Obama. You have the black face, right, in the White House, his family, and, you know, It's a certain amount of euphoria that was over black people, especially during the first 4 years of his administration. I think those last four, some people that was in slumber started to kind of open their eyes slightly. Other people seen it for what it was from the beginning. But now with this guy in there now, I think it's a whole different animal. A lot of these things are right in your face, where before it was subtle. It was behind the scenes. It was code language used. If we had had another president, for example, if the Clintons had went in, you would have had more of that same type of code and dealing with the black elite and things going on behind the scenes where it wasn't in your face. I think with this guy, being that he's kind of crass and rough around the edges, everything is in your face. He don't try to hide anything. And his people in the administration, basically the same way. Right. So, you know, things is right. It's happening right before us.
And history, tells us really what to do. Elliot, if I can, because another, I guess I would say important, and it might be personal, but important moment in history that August brings, or at least for us to acknowledge.
Go ahead.
At August is the, you know, the Marcus Garvey, the birth of Marcus Garvey,
mm-hmm.
And I was looking at this article on just came across this article in a BB2Me Casa talking about what Garvey did. And I think it's something I would like the listening audience to kind of provide feedback on, but us to engage in. And if I can, just to read this section, because I think it goes to the heart of what you just said. The untenable social equality. According to Garvey, the push by African Americans for social equality was an exercise in futility, since they were destined to remain a permanent minority who could not integrate because the majority whites would not allow them to. He therefore argued that it was impossible for African Americans to improve their conditions and enjoy autonomy in the United States, insisting that the only place where black people could enjoy full self-emancipation was in Africa. On August 2nd, 1920, UNIA held its first international convention at Madison Square Garden in New York, where more than 20,000 attendees promulgated the Declaration of Rights of the Negro Peoples of the World and elected association leaders who would refer to as leaders of the Negro people of the world. The movement also launched a program based on the Declaration of Rights of the black race, which sought to uplift the black people and encourage them to embrace self-reliance and nationhood. The month-long convention issued many declarations, including the proclamation of the red, black, and green flag as the official banner of the African race. It also developed plans to take African Americans back to Africa, where they were supposed to settle in Liberia. But, you heard me probably a lot of times, Elliot, and to the listening audience, mention about that convention. I mean, because I think that we should honor that infrastructure, because that was a moment where African people all over the world not only came together, but we created a set of programs and policies that we seen the outcome to. And it was based in a principle that should have been or was the unifying principle about the African race. But for me, Elliot, it's the point that the organizational infrastructure to take and pull together all these different interests and then produce something that mostly, and you can look around the black world, you see some semblance of the red, black, and green all over the world,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes really important to recognize that we made that out of a collective decision. And I guess that's my point, that in spite of our difference of geography, in spite of our political persuasion, we were able to come and in one body actually make decisions that impacted our lives or impacted their lives on the ground in the immediate. And when you say, you know, to me, Elliot, this, we're in that time again that we should be doing that based off of, you know, what we see the head of the Western European world acting the way he and they do. And they don't have no qualms with, as you said, they ain't got no qualms of pulling the gloves off and saying, look, affirmative action out the door, you know, controlling state control. Like we beat them up, you know, knock them in the head before they get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at the local level, but that's coming from the national level. You know what I mean? So I just thought that was as a reminder to us what we should be doing and what was done and, you know, what we can do again.
Well, the blueprints are there and ways that we can, I mean, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, you hear a lot of debates on, you know, among blacks, grassroots and certain leadership that are kind of, I wouldn't say scratching their head, but puzzled about what we need to do. And I fully understand what you're saying. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. The lessons of our past are there. And blueprints to move our people forward is clearly there. The thing is, do we plan to implement them? And how are we going to do that? I think some of the models that we had in the past, we made mistakes from, and I don't think we need to repeat those things.
Right.
And when I say some of the models we had in the past, I'm talking about like one leader, that type of thing, one man that was the kind of be all and end all, because of the country comes against him. And it's clear that white supremacy and the government that we live under don't want blacks to unify basically on any level. So if you have one leader and they come against them and they take, they remove that leader, then the movement dies.
Mm-hmm.
And the powers that be realizes that. I think that definitely has to change moving forward. You need either roving leadership or many leaders working mm-hmm. together. And that's the challenge. Because our people don't know how to put it this way. Since we've been here in the captivity that we suffered under the European domination and white supremacy, our people have forgotten. I don't say we don't know how. We've forgotten how to work together. Because of the mental slavery that we've been under and the pressure. Our people have been under tremendous pressure since we've been here, Richard.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that we've kept our sanity. But we have to relearn how to work together. It's clear. We can implement any of these things you're talking about. I hear Marcus call regularly and talk about Mr. Garvey's plan. And it can be implemented, especially mm-hmm. now. If he implemented it then or tried to, in the early 1915 to the early 1920s, and you didn't have all the things we have now, the social media, the telephones, the internet and things of that nature. I mean, we have so many tools now that those plans can be implemented, but it's people standing in the way. It's mindsets, it's minds. Sometimes right. It's religion that's standing in the way. And it's hurdles that we got to get beyond. I fully understand and agree with what you're saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, I said, yeah, we definitely just have to acknowledge them and speak forward to it. That's where I see where Dr. Fox talked about those values, you know, those values that we hold on that are, you know, in that whole thing that are white values and became more and more prominent as time went on. But, you know, if I can, Elliot, is another thing that struck me this week. I heard people talking about sister congressperson Maxine Waters, mm-hmm. and what she did to the Treasury Secretary, Munchen. You know, and you know, Elliot, I heard everybody was, you know, elated on how she utilized the procedure to, you know, frustrate this guy to the point where, I mean, to the point you said earlier, you know, he got to have to say to the other white male, get this black babe off my back. And, you know, like, didn't you read me the rules? Don't I know the rules? And she had to make it clear to him, wait a minute. I'm following the rules. You don't know the rules, and I can reclaim my time, you know. But it reminded me of Dr. Cynthia McKinney with Donald Rumsfeld. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everybody can remember that moment when she had him in this. This guy couldn't even remember what he was talking about. He couldn't even answer her question, and all she was asking, who is controlling these companies that is getting this money, and nobody know where it is. $1 billion disappeared. And he had to get to the general. And when he had to pass it off to the general, and she said, well, was there exercise going on during 9/11? Were they allowing this here bombing to occur because they were participating in this exercise? He seemed to have been thrown off. I don't know if, and I may be over-dramatizing it, Elliot, but I would suggest the audience go back and look at these two black women sitting in the position of the power of white supremacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in one case, because Rumsfeld, you know, as far as being the defense secretary, he has that long history in relationship to being a part of the political elite. And then as much as a part of the wealthy elite, right?
Okay.
And here they actually frustrate them. And the white males, these white males try to act like they can diss them right in front of the public's perception. But these women, black women, giving us symbols of what kind of power we should be exerting. But they had their information. They had their facts. They only asked the right question. And the question comes to us, are we asking the right questions for our own to exercise our own power, not as individuals, but as a people? And, you know, but I just thought, you know, it struck me, and I noticed that no one pulled together. They gave, Maxine, Representative Waters, her props for being able to show this male that in this position, I got the power. I don't know who you think you are. But it was interesting to see that no one actually also aligned that with Dr. Cynthia McKinney's position with Donald Rumsfeld. And you've seen what they did to her. Mm-hmm. And they tried to do it to Maxine earlier with her husband and dealing with his business dealing. But Maxine, the Republican Party, went out their way not to get her reelected in Georgia, in that seat. They went out their way. I think she even got held up one time trying to come through. The guards in the White House wouldn't let her through.
Yeah, well, not only the Republican Party, her own party, the Democratic Party, made sure that she wasn't elected again.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's the power in the moment that we should be emulating or at least recognizing. Because I don't know, Elliot. I hate to do this. It's going on a limb. I mean, maybe if we say Obama touched base when he slapped at Netanyahu, but you see Netanyahu slap back, and the whole congressional mechanism. They didn't support the president. They supported the prime minister of Israel.
Mm.
And how could the president speak to him or take a position, a policy position, the way he did? And you see what's coming down the pipe with that Senate bill with the 720.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You can't even say anything. You can't even make a protest and use the name against Israel. Now, come on now. And we've been here all this time. Something, if this ain't no time for an awakening, I don't know what is.
Let's grab add a couple calls in here on open forum Friday here. And you can get involved too. It's called, it's by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I'd like to hear from some new callers too. And when we have these open forums, get people involved. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Good, Brother Richard. How are you, sir?
Good, man. Yeah.
That's good, man. I like the conversation that I heard was coming from you two gentlemen, man, and information, man. I'm thinking about the forum tomorrow, and I'm wanting to hear more of the framework. I've been enlightened on the parade from 52nd Arch to it starts, I think, approximately about 10 o'clock, then ending at 52nd Pine, entering the park, and then you have the various speakers and the different subjects. Can you enlighten us on some of the speakers?
I know that Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. is going to be there and Professor James Smalls. Okay. I don't have the flyer in front of me for all of the speakers. And you know, that's another thing, too, Richard. I neglected to mention it to the listening audience. We won't be broadcasting tomorrow there live because, see, from my understanding, the city has certain hot spots all around in Philadelphia.
Right.
And that park, to my understanding, was a hot spot. So I didn't think it would be a problem for us broadcasting, and neither did Brother Oba. But come to find out, the city had enlightened him that it's only a small portion of the park that's a hot spot. And it's away from the area of the stage and everything. It's a ways away from it. We won't be broadcasting that. But it's no problem because there's going to be a lot of other events around the city moving forward that we're going to be out there involved in. But, that kind of...
Because, I'll be out of town tomorrow. Will they be coming to your area of communication and will you be putting them on the radio to talk to the various folks?
Well, Chairman Fred Hampton was on Sunday. Professor James Smalls was on before, but that was about 4 or 5 months ago. I'll reach out to Professor Smalls and get him back on.
And I believe, Elliot, that that they'll be at the – now, it's –
I heard about the UNIA, being at the UNIA.
Yeah, it's the UNIA, Division 121, on Sunday. Somewhere around 2 to 3, 3 p.m., you know, before the mass meeting or during the mass meeting.
So they will be there, Bridget?
That's what I understand. Chairman Fred Hampton and Professor Smalls would be speaking. So that, for those who are in the local area, who would like to, Sunday would be an opportunity for them to hear properly elaborate on what they were going to speak at African Liberation Day Saturday at the park, at Malcolm X Park.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you, I like what this gentleman, what the folks have done to put this together. How many annually have they had before this? How many? They've been running for a couple of years now.
Well, it's the 13th annual.
I found out about the last 3 or 4 years, so I'm impressed that it's still going on. How long is it? How old is it?
This is the 13th annual.
13. Oh, that's good, man. That's good. That's good. Got to keep it going, you know? Got to keep supporting it, you know? Keep it going. Yeah, okay. Well, I'll be listening to a lot of cars that are coming in, calling in, and stripping my knowledge of information, and I'm learning every day. So I'm waiting for the next person to call so I can listen, so I can listen to all y'all, so I can get that information. And you got the good information, man. I need it for the future.
Tim, before you leave,
yes, sir.
You heard some of the things that Brother Richard was mentioning in regards to our people implementing strategies to not only galvanize our people, but to help our people move forward, and realizing that everybody is not going to be on board, because anything that we've ever did since we've been here, you didn't have the majority of our people pushing for it. But a lot of our people benefited from actions of a few black folks. Give me your opinion on that.
Well, I've learned through my years that you can socialize with people, but you can't be sociable with everybody. That's one thing. You socialize, but you can't be sociable with everybody. The other thing I learned in working with people who are activists or in certain movements or helping different people who wanted to have a good, strong political campaign, or somebody who wanted to give a conference, and I did one myself, or hooking up with people so we got this situation that we're in economically, politically, and educationally, some people are just not going to be on the page with you all the time. So who can you trust? Who can you not trust? So my thing is, throughout my quest in life, the thing is, you're not going to get along with a whole lot of people, even the ones on your side at times. But I try to live in harmony. That's the whole idea. Because you're not going to be able to be as free as you think. In other words, as free of as we think a bird is, somebody can always shoot the bird down. All the places you think you can go, there's always something that can stop you. So I try to live in harmony with people so we can get it off the ground. And, Elliot, it takes time. You and Richard know it takes time for us to realize we got to get out of there. I don't even know people know, but our struggle is really life. I think we are so immune to this situation, we think it's normal. This is not normal, man. How you talking about the actions and the diplomacy of Trump? This is not normal. Listen, he's worse than Bush and Reagan and all the rest of them in the past. I wasn't way Woodrow Wilson, no, when he invited the Klan, the Birth of the Nation. I wasn't there. But this guy, today, I've never seen nobody like this. But I'm surprised how people are adjusting. I was looking at television earlier. They were in Wyoming, where he got 70% of the vote. Oh, the people says he rambles off, he rambles on with the mouth, but he's saying, he's doing what he says, and he's doing a good job, but he needs to get off Twitter. Boom. Then I turn around, you see every time you see a black person in the crowd with him. So these people are normalizing. They're being normalized by this. That's the problem. He's normalizing. He's being normalized in the communities. Now, the ones who are not with him, we're not with him. The ones who are going to fight him, we're going to fight him. But I want to know where the heads of black people are, because I'm in the black race. I got so many problems. Cheney University, they're trying to take their certification September 1st. No public education that we used to walk to long ago, neighborhood schools no longer around. No business in our community. Our politicians look like us always going to jail. Right? And then on the state level, to the federal level, and power politics for local, for real. Do these people really know where we're at, where we're going, what direction we're supposed to go? They're not together like we're supposed to be, Elliot. I want to hear what you and Richard have to say, because I hope I'm not the only one thinking this, and I know I'm not.
Well,
where are we going? How are we going to get there? How are we going to get out of this?
Well, one question before I deal with your question. Let me ask you, Rich, because I know you've been working on this thing, Brother Tim, the accreditation, if Cheney loses that accreditation on September the 1st, because I didn't know there was a deadline, then what happens to the university
okay,
and some of our students that are there?
Now, listen to this. When I came out of West Virginia High School in 1979, these were my choices. My first choice was Cheney. My second choice was Howard. And my third choice was Wilberforce. Now, my mom happened to be educated at the time. She had been teaching since I was in 10th grade of West Virginia High School. And she said, Tim, Cheney's accreditation is shaky. And 1979? Okay, listen to this. So I said, I didn't even know what that meant. Somebody who just turned 18 in February, get ready to go to a university. I knew I was going to go to HBCU. She said to me, Tim, if you go to a school with accreditation shaky, when you graduate, you won't look at that as being a certified person, whatever you majored in. So I said, okay. So what happened was, me, at my young age, I thought D.C. was far. At that time, my cousin Buford Outlaw was at Howard. He did his first year. He said, Tim, you come with me. I said, I don't know if I want to go that far. So a guy down the street from me, who used to box, he just boxed out of Joe Frazier's gym. I boxed out of the Executioner's gym at the time. And it was Ashley Hines. He had a Lincoln University stick on the back of his hot rod. I'll never forget that. So he said, Tim, you know, you're going to go to school. Come to Lincoln. So I came there. I never looked back. But Cheney has been dealing with that situation with certification since Woodrow Wilson and the people on the staff were unqualified. Elliot, you got to take care of business amongst yourself because you got an enemy on the outside. Now, remember this. Lincoln is under a different situation than Cheney. People say, well, how are Lincoln able to get out of it? Because we've always got private funding. We've also had the international connection. We had a lot of Jamaican folks. We had people from Nigeria. Lincoln always had the international connection and the alumni getting back. What messed up Cheney was the governors, the very governors. You see what the governors doing to public school education. They weren't giving Cheney the money they were supposed to give them. That's one thing. What was Cheney's alumni doing? So my question to you is, if they take public schools in the neighborhood, tear them down, make them condos, or just let them sit there and make a football field out of it, or just let it sit there until somebody else takes it. Can they do that? If they take their high school, they take the university. Sure, they'll take it. You are not seeing gentrification in this neighborhood, politically, economically, and socially. Yeah, and I hope somehow, some way, that our people wake up, because Cheney's in our backyard, Lincoln's not. If they take Cheney, they're going to look for Howard, Lincoln, Fisk. They look for any other Bluefield State. They look for anything, any HBCU they want, because they see we're vulnerable.
But they have already been, that depends on the state. But I think also, or the piece that I would add, Elliot, is that that's been floating around is the point that Westchester, which is also a state college, is wants to expand. And you can look at it. It's interesting how we can look at so many things from the lens of gentrification, right? They want the land that Cheney is sitting on. So if Cheney loses accreditation, Westchester, which is out there, which has already been talking about, and from what I understand, there's already dual programs going on where students from Cheney can take programs at Westchester, and students from Westchester can take programs from Cheney. And therefore, Westchester, which is, again, a state-run school, but not in the fiscal or management challenge that Cheney is in. And we have to get into that issue as far as back to the question of, is it something about the way we manage our infrastructures? We'll take over and manage Cheney. You know, and that will become the move that I hear is in the wings. Westchester, a state-run school that isn't in the same, that's getting state funds, but is not in the fiscal challenge that Cheney is, not in the accreditation challenge that Cheney is expanding its curriculum and will take over the land territory because they're not that far apart of where Cheney is at and be able to do more things because they'll be in more open space.
And Richard, what you're saying is correct, so correct. And if you look at Westchester, they don't have no more room. So it's like being condensed in that area that Westchester's at, and they're saying Cheney got all his land. And believe it or not, Cheney has had some new rivers recently. They got a land they're not using, and Westchester's looking at that. To give you another example, Florida A&M had those problems for many years. The Florida A&M's alumni is so strong. Florida State always want to take Florida A&M. They can't do it. Their alumni is just too strong. So here we go again. What's the endowment of Lincoln? What's the endowment of Cheney? What is the endowment of Howard? And look at Howard. It'd be hard to knock on Howard's door and take them because look where they're at. All those progressive black people. The other thing, Howard plays the game. Howard says, I'm going to take so many whites in my borders. And their law school is like maybe 60% black, 30% white. Like, give you an example, Senator Wofford, he graduated from Howard's law school, and he got his LLM from Yale. See, you don't talk about Howard like they talk about Yale. So whites, see, that's the thing about whites. Whites always want to come in our area and do what they want to do, and then they can be in their own area. But they don't want us in their area, and they want to take ours. So, man, let me tell you something. Every meeting that I can make for Cheney, first of all, Richard, you and I back and forth on Cheney's campus and Lincoln's campus. That's our home. I mean, that's like my neighborhood. I'm going to go there anytime, anywhere, to do what we got to do. And you and I get positive results from doing it. We were able to mentor young folks. They were very enlightened. They were impressed. They wanted to learn. Am I right, Richard?
Yeah.
I'm not going to let those minds, those great minds, go to waste because they might not be able to get that at Temple or Drexel if they can get into school in Westchester. We need to have that cultivation with our people, teaching our people. Because you and I are going to change Lincoln's campus and do what we want to do the way we want. I don't want to go on Temple's campus and do what we do, really, or Drexel or Penn. That's in my home. I need to go on my people to teach my people, uplift my people the way I want to uplift them. So, you know, that's freedom. Freedom is going to your own hospital, your own business, your own school, your own neighborhood, circulating around your own people. That's freedom. That's freedom. Be able to move in a circumference and diameter in peace with your own folks in your social equality. Equality is the quality of people you're dealing with, which should be our people. So, you know, it's a fight. It's a struggle like everything. We got to hold on to what we got. People want to take it. They realize how important it is until they take it. So I'm with the fight. Meanwhile, listen to some more callers, man. I want to hear what y'all got to say, man.
You know, all right, bro.
Program, like always. Right. Thanks.
All right. You know, before we go to the next call, Richard, Tim asked a question about, you know, what do we do? And it was kind of a rhetorical question that we just raised earlier. One of the suggestions, because I said we always got to learn, and it don't seem like when we do certain things, and I might be wrong, that we take lessons from the past, especially looking at our relationship with Europeans and what has happened. I think in moving forward, we have to have a serious vetting process among groups of black folks. For one reason, that when you talk about serious organizing, then white supremacy talks about seriously eliminating it.
Mm.
And when I say seriously eliminating it, by any means necessary, I'm talking about on their part. So, if we look back and see that, I think that the a close, and I don't know how close, whether it was number one man, number two, a close person in the circle with Malcolm X was a informant. If you look at the close circle of Martin Luther King, somebody was an informant. Other leaders that we had, including Marcus Garvey, I think his number two man, was the first black that ever worked for that FBI as an informant. All doing, what was that, that organization that was started by the FBI, but started by retired FBI people that operated in the South. What was the name of that organization, Richard? They did a documentary on them.
Now, you know, I'm thinking OS, but I'm not.
No. Oh, my goodness. One of the callers can think of it. I'm drawing a blank right now because they had a list of black people that they paid to be informants, the amounts that they paid them, and things of that nature. And when it's revealed who these people are or were, then there's no repercussions among our people. You know, I think in anything that we do moving forward, we got to have a serious vetting process and plus seriously hold these people accountable. And however seriously you want to hold them accountable, that'll be up to the listening audience to decide about the seriousness. Because if the seriousness of these people that we're dealing with almost takes it to the ultimate level, then we got to consider us being serious to the point of dealing with people that do this. I'll give an example. You got an elitist integrationist group like the Urban League that puts out the State of Black America. Now, I think in the 2014 report, they mentioned that in all stratas of life for black people in this country, that they're under attack. Now, I think that was their 2014 mantra, that black folks are under attack. Now, if somebody is under attack, then it's an enemy, or you're not being attacked. There is an enemy. So when you're recruiting people to fight this enemy, they can't be assimilationists, because that's an oxymoron. You can't be fighting an enemy if your soldiers is looking to join the other side. But we've had people that supposed to be fighting for black folks that were straight out assimilationists and integrationists. So how does that work? And we've allowed it. And when I say we, I'm talking about our people as a whole. We've allowed people that was sometimes open and sometimes undercover assimilationists and integrationists to be working in black movements. Those things have to change moving forward. We can't allow that. If it's clear that our people are under attack, and if it ain't clear now, that's what I'm saying about some of these things being in your face. With this guy in here now, that had got all types of white supremacists all in his cabinet, if it's not clear that, I don't care what they say, because he went to a Klan cop rally up there in upstate New York or in Long Island, wherever it was, and told those white cops to brutalize and beat them in the back of the paddy wagon. That's how Freddie Gray got killed. He was brutalized in the back of the wagon. Well, if he's telling these cops to brutalize people and bang their heads when they put them in the car and probably worse than that, then you had a black cop organization, Noble, that the very next week had Jeff Sessions addressing them, and he's telling black cops that you're needed, you're valuable to what we do. Come on here, Richard. Am I crazy? Am I losing my mind?
No.
What the hell? What the hell? If you got a black cop organization that see what's going on, they are in the precincts with these white folks that's uttering racial epithets and everything else. They know what these white people are doing, whether they want to hide behind the blue wall or raise the blue wall of silence or whatever they want to do. What are you inviting Jeff Sessions to address your organization for? What the hell can he say? What contribution can he give? And then he comes in and tells them something stupid. And well, maybe they believe it. I don't know. But for what purpose is that to have somebody? The administration already put out their edict. They want cops to whatever they're doing. They're going to be business as usual. And plus, he said that he's going to make sure they support it in what they're doing. So what do you have? Jeff Sessions come out to give a double message? Or Jeff Sessions probably think that black folks are stupid. Not probably think. Jeff Sessions, former Klan member or Klan sympathizer, think that black folks are stupid.
Then you got to call
these leaders. Whoever this noble's leaders are, they need to be called on the carpet. For what purpose do you have that guy addressing your group?
And at least be giving just that. I mean, as you say, for those of us who are looking at what is going on, at least help us understand the rationale, because it may be a rationale. But as of right now, it don't make no sense, because even Beauregard said, I'm coming, you know, I'm ready to clamp down on everybody. I mean, just recently, even with this here whole thing about the secrets getting out or the... what is that they were concerned around? You know,
leaks,
you know. So that's anything and everything. You know, you can't talk. But, you know, one thing that you did bring up, Elliot, when you told about the Urban League report and what they issued going to that point, because I'm asking, does this NAACP warning for black travelers visiting Missouri fall into the same kind of category that you're talking about
Almost definitely. You're going to issue an edict or a travel advisory. This is the first time that they ever did it. Now, the NAACP has been around since 1915, and this is the first time that they ever issued a travel advisory. Most of our people was going in states getting lynched and all that stuff, going down south to visit relatives and never coming home, but this is the first time they issued one. And that's clearly an integrationist and assimilationist group. So you're going to issue a travel advice. See, that's what I'm talking about. Stuff like that. Stuff like that. Come on. Let's go. I'm going to grab another call. Let's go to 646. Mm-hmm. Let's get 646 involved.
Yeah, Elliot, first and foremost, you're slightly off point in regard to them clowns in the NAACP. The bottom line is...
Wait a minute, what did you say there? What's the name of the group?
I call them the NAACP.
Okay.
Because they double agents for the white man.
Okay.
That's all they are. The bottom line is this. If they was really about doing some damage and boycotting some goddamn place, you know where they would boycott to begin with? Florida. Florida, because all them bastards do is have their conventions and their get-togethers and all of that in Florida. The clown Tom Joyner boat goes out of Florida. You know what I mean? The NAACP have conventions in Florida. Something where there could be some real economic damage to a place. That's where you boycott at. You don't go out there and boycott some damn place like Missouri. What the hell Missouri gonna do for anybody as far as hurt them economically? You know what I mean? I mean, these Negroes just play games with us.
Yeah.
Now, earlier you were talking about old Slicky Slickster Maxine Waters.
Maxine alone.
No. Maxine is Slicky Flicky Licky Licky. She is one special negress. Oh, she's a good woman. I'm not saying she's a bad woman, but she's a slickster. Now, here it is. She's a hell of a showman. Because if you really want to study her history, honestly, what has she honestly done? Her community has basically left her, if the truth was to be told. It done gentrified itself to where as she's lucky if she's able to be reelected next term. So this is one of the reasons why she put on these fine buck dancing nigger shows that she do. Reclaiming my time. Reclaiming my time. I only have one question, and I want one of y'all to answer it. Did that no good filthy devil answer her question, yes or no?
Oh, no, he didn't answer it. I mean, but wait a minute, Jay, because I have to throw this back because it was one of those points in giving her props, and I'm not taking away any point that you're making in relationship to the community that she comes in at in general. But did, with the questioning she raised, did that get, what's the communication director, did it get it get him fired?
I don't know. I don't know if it got him fired or not, because I don't know if he's still on the job or not, because he's of irrelevance. He's of no irrelevance. The bottom line boils down to this. Did he answer the question? White daddy make him answer the question? Or was he able to dance and do his thing and evade the answer another question? That's all we really need to know. The theater is always going to be there, brother. Because no. If you notice, the Negro went out there and made him a song. My old lady told me that he was even on The View this morning singing the song.
Oh, yeah, they did a little gospel dance based off of it. But, oh, but reason, man. But Jay,
let me sing a little bit for you of it. Oh, oh, we claim it. My God,
but her raising about Cephas, because and I can't say this guy, what's his name, Scaramucci was trying to sell his Skybridge Capital to a Chinese firm. This the Treasury Secretary sits on the board of that Cephas board, which has all of these here bureaucratic offices that's a part of. The question is, if China is supposed to be they're trying to put restriction on any foreign hostile country buying any property in the United States, here the one of Trump's top men is trying to sell his company, Skybridge, to a Chinese firm. And she's asking, well, if you're sitting on that board, you're the president of that board, are you going to be able to scrutinize? Now, she didn't get into the details. And he said, I can't get into the details. But that was one of the details that was on the table. Can Scaramucci's company be sold to this Chinese firm, HNA Capital, which is a subsidiary or a Chinese conglomerate, HNA Group, could he be able to sell that company? Now, what happened right afterwards was Trump now fires him. Well, because the person he made the Secretary of State, who comes from Homeland Security, says, get rid of him. Well, because he's going to bring more stuff to him.
Well, you know, the bottom line is, a lot of deals that were in the works are slowing down now because of what's going on with Mueller and him going out there, you know, subpoenaing people. Now, if they're really about the American people, then Donald Trump and some of his family members should honestly be indicted for crimes because they have committed some crimes. So the bottom line boils down to is what type of information is going to be exposed. And once the information is exposed, then what's going to happen? Because you got a lot of these right-wing nuts talking about, well, if Donald Trump family members is indicted and Donald Trump is indicted, we're going to go out here and we're going to have a civil war. We're going to do what we got to do to protect the nation. We're going to repress Donald Trump because he's our man. You know what I mean? And then the thing is, these dumb Neanderthals don't even know. Every chance that cracker gets, he just screw over them. He do something else to hurt them. You know what I mean? And here it is. He uses these little cold words and these little moves talking about immigration and all of that. We got to make it so that the poor Neanderthal trash has the ability to get jobs and all of that. I mean, it's just absolutely sickening. You know what I mean? And I'm going to let you know straight up, I don't want none of these wetbacks in here. You know what I mean? I'm going to tell it like it is. I don't want none of them in here. I've worked with them in the past. I've dealt with them. And, you know, I will say one thing about them. We could learn a few things from them in regards to community and how we collectively come together to build our neighborhoods and do certain things. I will give them that benefit of the doubt. But the bottom line boils down to they don't have no interest at heart for us. You know what I'm saying?
But when you look at it from the history perspective, Jay, and maybe again, I ain't supposed to go out there on this one, but that Southern territory is a Mexican territory that was taken from them. Correct me if I'm wrong.
And my reply to you is, this is a white man's country who conquered everything and everyone with what? The gun. It's just like you talking about us going back to Liberia. Yeah, I would love to go back to Liberia. I couldn't think of anything better, but I know I'm not going back out there without a gun. You know what I'm saying? I know that's not gonna happen. Because the reality is, how the hell are you gonna be able to defend yourself? We can't even defend ourselves. That's what happened to us in Liberia. This Neanderthal decided he wanted to send us over there, and then you had that filthy, stinking C2Mo go over there and do his thing to us on the most highest and brutal level. I mean, we got to keep it real. The only place we ever going to go and feel any sense of freedom is when we take with us the damn gun and be able to start beheading them like the Indians did, or whatever you want to call it, the Native American. It's just like if we're talking about building a nation here in America, you know the first thing you got to do, you got to start beheading some of our brethren. You got to start putting the neck loose on them like they did in South Africa. The only thing that happened in South Africa was they stopped before they could really do the job because, the Stockholm Syndrome Master Blaster Nelson Mandela came home. And how did that happen? The white daddy sent his ass back to us. You know what I'm saying? They said, we know what we're going to do. We're going to play the Jedi mind trick on them. We're going to give them so-called power and all of this. But you know the one thing we ain't going to do? We ain't going to get their black asses the gun to be able to defend themselves. So let's stop playing all these games about this white man. This white man will give you anything other than the gun. He's never going to get you in a position to be able to defend yourself. You know why? Because he can always put in our midst some Negro that will go out here and do something to hurt us, and then he just walk away. He just walk away. It's just like, I'll even go even further. You talk about these Negroes that supposedly killed Malcolm X. All I want to know is how the Negroes was able to live their lives in jail and not be beheaded. That's the only thing I want to know. I mean, let's keep it 100. Do you think if they was an Italian or anything like that, and they killed a John Gotti or somebody else, that they wasn't gonna get murked up in the prison? But no, we always talk about we gotta forgive, we gotta forget. And now here come the biggest charade ever. These pork chop chicken eating pimp preachers are now gonna get together, 1,000 of them, in March. This bunch of retarded bastards gonna march, hurt their feet, stare, pray, and sing spiritual, and ask the white daddy to treat them nice. Like Donald Trump really give a damn about it. But you know what really happens in the truth of the matter is they go there and they spend their money in whatever its city is, and then they come back home and they say, oh, we marched. We got on our knees and we prayed. And oh, Jesus is going to save us. This God daddy is going to save. All I want to know is this. In the 600 years almost that we've been here, had the white man ever saved us from getting a goddamn ass whipping? Has he ever saved us? Did he save those guys that blown up at the World Trade Center? Has he ever stopped wars? Has he ever stopped the mistreatment of human beings on this planet? Has the sky daddy ever saved any goddamn body? But you're going to keep on praying to the sky daddy and looking for me to get you 10% of my money, talking about all you got to believe in the sky daddy. But you know what they won't do? They won't go to that church and say, why don't we collectively pull our money together and build us a food pantry? Why don't we build a co-op? Why don't we do the necessary things to where we can feed ourselves and take care of our members? You know, will they pay your right bill when you can't afford to pay your right bill? Will they do any goddamn thing for you to make your life a little bit better? They'll kick you out of the church when there it is your mama and daddy and the grandmother and the whole family been at the church for all of these years because one of your family members decide they want to become a twisted sister. But that's a place of God. Oh, that's the sky daddy's hole. Your Negroes need to be out of your mind. And that's for all of these religions. I'm talking about Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, all of them. They all ain't nothing but a bunch of frauds. Because they're not saving no souls. Because when you saving souls, the thing that you do is you take care of your people first. You make sure your people are fed. They ain't doing nothing in regards or even building community centers or educating the children. Here it is, you got these pork chop chicken eating institutions that won't even open up the door at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to take these babies off the street and feed them and educate them and give them some nourishment. But we supposed to believe in that filthy garbage? Because there's a scared daddy and know he's going to save your black ass. It ain't not going to happen, bro. Ain't going to happen. You give me any preacher that's going to do one thing. I just want the pork chop chicken eater to do one thing for me. One thing for me. That's all I want him to do is start a revolution in this church talking about I want all of my members to take their money out of the white bank and put all your money into a black bank and buy stock, and then we go do our thing. You get me a pork chop chicken eating preacher that talking about doing something like that, then I may sit my ass up in this church and tell him I believe in Sky Daddy there, because you talking some revolutionary Sky Daddyism. But you think it's going to happen? No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because they got an agenda. Their agenda is to pimp you out like they always do. All of these religions do nothing but pimp you out. Do you notice that there, in all of these religions, there's just a group of the people that live so well, and then the rest of the people live like nothing but paupers? They live like nothing but popers. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a joke, man. But we still want to get up every Sunday, go in there to put on the suit, to sit up there for 2.5 hours listening to some other BS. Talking about you gonna have some salvation and you can't even take care of yourself. You can't even feed yourself. You can't even clothe your family in the proper fashion. And when you come to them bastards and you ask them bastards for some sort of help and assistance, they tell you get on your damn knees and pray to the sky daddy. He'll make a way. It grows out of your mind.
Jay.
But we gonna get 1,000 of them together to go march in Washington and say Negro spiritual and ask for Satan to treat them better. Do you see the logic in this? They're going to go to Washington and ask a filthy, no-good, stinking devil like Donald Trump to treat them better. Could you explain to me the logic?
Look,
I know Elliot kid,
look,
but I like to hear Richard. Richard always do it a little more gentle than you do, Elliot. You know what I mean? He does it. He's smooth with it. You, Elliot, are a little more blunt. But really, what are you going to achieve? You've been marching for the last 40, 50 years. And what have we achieved with marching? The first thing is, talk about we got civil rights. All I want to know is, do the white women got more rights than black people? Yes. Do the homosexuals got more rights than black people? Yes. So who the hell did it benefit? Who the hell did it benefit? It didn't benefit black people. But you know, all I could say is believe in the sky daddy. Get up on Sunday, clean the Cadillac. You know what I mean? Put on a nice suit. Take your weekly bath. You know what I mean? Look good. Comb your hair. And sit up there and listen to the words. You know what I mean? And then come back out. But don't forget one thing. To leave your money. Because if you don't put your money in the plate, somebody going to call your black ass by Wednesday and ask you what happened to my check.
Jay.
And on that note, brothers, speak to you on Sunday.
Talk
and,
to you later.
I forgot one day. God bless you.
Thank you for your contribution, Jay. You know, Richard, Jay raises some points there, and especially when he's talking about religion and how our people view the religious system that we practice here. It's clear to me, in accordance to what Jay was saying, that we have a Eurocentric or European slant to most of the religions that we practice here. And if we don't bring a European slant to the religion, we have a European slant on how we view the people practicing a particular religion. You mentioned about women earlier, and you, when you were talking about Maxine Waters and Cynthia McKinney. And I don't think you were necessarily talking about Maxine Waters as an individual, but you were talking about her actions.
Mm-hmm.
The actions that she did could have been practiced by any sister. And you were talking about people in government offices at the time. But most of our people, and especially in religious orders, don't look at black women as being an integral part of what they're doing. They want black women to participate, and especially if you look at Christianity. The thing that's upholding Christianity, especially in the black community, is women in these churches. You just go to the average church, most of the people there are women. They're upholding a lot of this. And when I say upholding, they're the backbone of a lot of these churches. They want them to be the backbone as far as participation. But most of our men, black men, whether you're involved in religion or not, you look at your women in a lower status. If you follow what I'm saying, Richard?
Oh, definitely. Now, I mean, that's male patriarchy of the supposedly of the, as you said, the Eurocentric church.
Exactly. Now, if you look at and start investigating our cultures before we came to these shores, we didn't look at women in a lower status. Women were equal to men. In government, in leadership, how we ran our families, it wasn't a you do what I say, you shut up, you this, do that, you be seen and not heard, and all that type of stuff. Those things are European values. It's clear that they're European values that has been interjected not only in our thought pattern, but our practices and what we do, whether we're involved in church or whether you're just an average guy dealing with your woman at home. It's clear. So we have to have a revolution of values when we're dealing. Everything has to be changed in order for our people to move forward. Our value system is too tied in with European values. The things that we do, and we have to realize this, almost like an alcoholic. Before you can leave alcohol alone, you have to admit to yourself and realize, I'm an alcoholic. And then you can start moving forward. When you keep evading it, and I'm not really, I just drink on the weekend. I drink when I get off from work. But you happen to drink every day. You know what I'm saying, Richard? When you start trying to rationalize it, then you don't realize you've got a problem. The more we realize that we have adopted European values and a European mindset, and I'm talking about some of the most conscious individuals, when you realize that some of this man's values and mindsets and attitudes towards your own brother have seeped into your mindset, then you got to realize that, you know, it's a fight. It's a mental fight to throw off the shackles of what we've been dealing with.
And you know, Elliot, if you don't mind, I like to use that as the segue to go over again what those values are, that are those white values that we have to wrestle with. And I think all of us, because it informs our behavior, you know.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I think that, you know, Dr. Fox did, at least among other psychologists, but for made it cogent of what those and put it down in just five values. And if I could just share what those values are for the listening audience, because it's something, as you said, that we have to constantly and be so diligent about in our self-reflection in order when we relate with each other. We can either support, because as you said, when you go to those AA meetings, those are support meetings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody acknowledged that they had this problem,
exactly.
And they know they can't deal with it by themselves, and they have to come with others. They acknowledge it, but they say, I got to come with and sit with others who recognize and acknowledge that problem, and then they share the challenges, which gives them strength.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Wait a minute, Richard, before you, because I don't want to cut you. I want you to keep your train of thought.
Yeah.
But why can't we adopt that same principle in order to help our people understand that we've adopted this man's values in almost everything we do? And listen, it's understandable. We were in captivity. I'm talking about physical captivity under this man for over 250 years, in some places of the diaspora longer.
Right.
So it's understandable that we were forced to adopt those values. But now they become a part of our mental psyche. And sometimes we don't realize it. But, just like you said, when you're using those same principles, when somebody is going to an AA meeting or NA and you acknowledge that you've got a problem and you got other people there to try to help you. In fact, if you go to those meetings and don't acknowledge your problem, they throw you behind out of there. Because you're not ready. They don't figure you're ready yet.
Right. And it would be infecting the others who are there trying to wrestle because of with their problem. So it's important just to have the people who acknowledge that we recognize it, but I'm not strong enough to deal with it by myself.
Let's take a brief break, Richard, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation, and the callers can get involved, too. We always love new callers. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Now, what's happening in all the urban cities across America is that you got a process in place right now in urban redevelopment. They're using five techniques to totally wipe you out. One is called gentrification. They're going into all these major cities that used to be majority black population populated cities, and they are erasing you in places like Detroit, Michigan, New York, Boston, Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. used to be the chocolate city. When I went there with President Carter in 1976, at that time, Washington, D.C. was 78% black. Now it's down about 42% black. Chocolate City is gone. Detroit, Michigan is going to be totally wiped out by immigrants pouring into the society. Since 1970 up to now, we've had 45 million immigrants coming to the United States. They came in over you, and they're displacing you. And then the second term they use besides gentrification to wipe you out is a thing they call privatization. You go into Detroit, Michigan, as they gentrify, they're going to take all the public resources and things that should be owned by the public, they're going to place them through privatization to the hands of the wealthy whites. Whites are going to buy your golf courses, your subway systems, your bridges, your tunnels. They're going to control your airports, your parks, your museums. Why? Again, because Anderson says, he who owns and controls the resources got the power. If you own and control nothing, you are totally, absolutely useless and expendable. And that's why nothing has changed for us, because we don't understand the system of gentrification and privatization. The other thing they're using to wipe you out in those cities is called metropolitan forms of government. Where now they're going to do regional form of government, which means that the whites in the suburbs can come into those black cities and set up some kind of consortium to control what goes on inside those cities so they can extract the resources out of them. Another concept they use in those cities is called cool cities, which says cool cities mean bring in the gays and let them replace black folk. And that's the fourth scheme they use on you. And in Detroit, Michigan, using that as an example again, the governor there has already set up in movement a system where he wants to go to the President of the United States, Obama, and ask him for a green card system where he can start importing Chinese from China to make Detroit, Michigan the biggest Chinatown in the United States. Even though that city had a 90% black population, they're going to bury blacks in Detroit, Michigan, underneath Asians coming into Detroit. And already in Detroit, Michigan, in Dearborn, right on the outskirts of Detroit, Arabs own 90%. 90% of all the businesses in the city of Detroit are owned by Arabs. Arabs and 90% black population must go to the Arabs to get what they want in terms of food, medicine, clothing. Because they own out of the gas stations. You got 146 gas stations in Detroit, Michigan. Arabs now own 144 in a black city. Blacks own two gas stations out of 146. You own nothing. The rest, the hotels, are owned, and the 7-Elevens are owned by Indians. Asians are owning the laundries. They're owning the hair and wig shops, the nail shops. Blacks own nothing in a 90% black city. And that's why now Detroit went into poverty.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for Awakening. Again, we're in open forum. This is Friday evening here in the city of Philadelphia, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, 9:33 to be exact. And we're in open forum. You can give us a call. You can participate in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215, 490-9832. Brother Richard.
Yes, you know, Brother Elliot, can I, you know, every time you raise something, it's something else that goes on. It's a, you know, in, listening to the last piece you just played, it just reminds me of an article I just seen in these times, where it says Detroit underground economy. And it says that the city's so-called renaissance has reached only small portions of the 139 square miles leaving much of the population, which is more than 80% African-American, behind. But over a decade now, this is an article that just came out this July 2017 in the magazine In These Times. And it goes on to say, but over decades of poverty, Detroiters have learned to get by without access to traditional cash or credit. There's a resilience informal economy rooted in the neighborhoods and communities. Barter, gifts, time trading, underground businesses are ubiquitous. Throughout the city, much of there's an understanding that with no job to be had, fellow community members are struggling too. It's necessary then to engage in a currency of community. That's, you know, that's the key, Elliot. That's what we did at the turn of the century. When we look at over all these co-ops and cooperatives that created credit unions, banks, farm. I mean, you speak all the time about the farm cooperatives that exist. That was the key for people when we were at the time. And, you know, this is then as now, but it strengthens those values that you were talking about and supporting, because a lot of those women helped run those social political and economic organizations, relationships that were there. So I Claude Anderson raising what's going on in Detroit, and then when we see these reports, when he made that, Elliot, how long ago was that?
This it might have been about 8 years ago.
Yeah, and they're saying in this article is talking about Detroit now, what it has to do, as those things he was mentioning are gaining traction in Detroit, in cities all over the country, whether they are in the South, the North, the Midwest, or the West. But the solutions is we have to move away from those things and be supportive of ourselves. But as you said, we're not going to be able to do that if we are harboring white values. If we're holding on to those white values, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, and, it's got to be, along with what you're stating, us realizing we need to do this for ourselves, it needs to be a two-prong or three-prong or a multi-prong approach, because you do need, especially in the environment that we live in, you do need conscious black mm-hmm. individuals that'll fight on a political level locally for these dollars that are in our communities. Because our people pay taxes. If we didn't pay, I think that income tax was started in the 1930s. If we didn't pay income taxes, then, you know, those things we wouldn't necessarily have to worry about. But our tax dollars that our people pay in these neighborhoods go towards refurbishing white areas and gentrifying black areas. All your money goes to somebody else. And a lot of these officials know it. That's why you need somebody in those offices that are conscious and that have the same values that the neighborhoods have, not in just lip service, but meaning it. So they can fight for those dollars to stay in the communities, to help the people in the communities. You know, I understand a lot of our people, oh, man, I don't want to be involved in politics. And they're right, because a lot of these blacks that get involved in politics, they have a European mindset. And as soon as they get those political jobs, they don't concern themselves with the community anymore. It's all about themselves, lining their own pocket, making deals and all that other stuff. And then that turns the people off, figuring that all our people that get involved are just white men in black face, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't need that anymore moving forward. If we're going to have people involved in this political process here, which is needed, then we're going to have conscious individuals that run for these seats and offices. And the ones that don't and betray the community, they need to pay a price. Now, again, the price that had to be paid, the community might have to dictate that. I mean, we heard Jay, what he was saying a while ago, and that might be the case. I'm not saying it's not. But, you know, heretofore, they don't pay no price when they betray the community. They come right back out there, and some of them still live in the community to a certain extent. Some of them didn't line their pockets so much. When they get out of these offices, they don't live nowhere near the community that they formerly represented.
Yeah, it's a fact. And, you know, it's another article where what you were saying, in two fronts you always raise, because in Detroit is a young woman who's running for mayor, and she's 22. The thing that is interesting that, you know, about Myra D. Jones and her saying, and it goes to the point of your consciousness being conscious, but it doesn't exclude where the community has to stay vigilant. Just because somebody say they're conscious or they do a couple of things that are conscious acts, that don't mean the third thing will be. And that third thing might be the most devastating thing. So it requires us in general, all of us as individuals in a collective manner, not to just to have the person in the office, but to be watching and make and reinforcing what that person need to do. And if they don't do, then Elliot, don't tell me you got me agreeing with Jay. Elliot, don't tell me that. No, please, don't tell me that. But to some degree, that's what has to be done, you know. But it's interesting that she says that Jones' interest in politics can be mostly attributed to her time at City Capitol Hill, though she's been pondering this for a while. But she said, "I knew this was something I wanted to do. I wanted to give the voiceless a voice," she added. For Jones, the voiceless included people who lived in Detroit, many neighborhoods. She says she liked to change the focus of Detroit's revitalization from downtown and midtown to those parts of town. So here, one, being young, two, being a female who recognized the need, which we were just talking about, women taking that kind of leadership role, and three, recognizing that the revitalization project that has been going on by mostly rich white men and collaborators, she, because of her, where she comes from, recognized that that's not the program that's going to solve what was read earlier, those people who are living in other parts of the city who are not even feeling any of that billions of dollars of revitalization money, just like we in Philadelphia are not feeling the billions of dollars of this revitalization and gentrification money. I mean, you can walk around this city and you don't see no black man digging these holes, building, laying these bricks, putting in these houses, these fixtures, or wiring these houses. It's popping up all over the place.
And, you know, listen, we're going to have a guest coming on in the very near future to talk about that issue that you're raising right now. He was supposed to be on with us this evening, but he had to cancel. But, you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, Richard, because if you, and I know that you're aware of it, that book that, study, that which turned into a book that W.E.B. Du Bois wrote when he came here, The Philadelphia Negro, he talks in there, in a chapter in the book, he talks about black tradesmen in Philadelphia that couldn't get in the trade unions.
Right.
And that was over 100 years ago when he wrote that. Mm-hmm. And nothing has changed. See, listen, the times have changed. It's not 1899, it's 2017. But the mindset of these people have not changed. And we don't have enough discussions on that, because somehow black folks think that the white psyche, and I'm talking about the overwhelming majority of white people. You know, sometimes when we talk about whites, our people make it singular. Oh, I got a white friend, and he's all right. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the overwhelming. Let me turn this here. The overwhelming majority of thought among Europeans since we've been here is to always subvert any moves that black folks are making. Mm-hmm. And it's obvious because we're fighting the same battles like all the time. It's like history repeating itself. Right. I look back at that, you know, you look back because they put a lot of stock in a lot of activists now, you know, when they talk about our struggle, they talk about the 60s and the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65. But if you look back and almost to 100 years before that, what was the need of the Civil Rights Bill of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 65? I mean, what was the need in that? That in itself should have shown black people what they're dealing with. You know, if you look, Richard, I just want to read a couple things dealing with what I just mentioned. Because it was a huge debate during the Civil War, especially when the tide was changing, what was going to come about. Now, you shared with me, and we're going to have a program where we go into that article you shared with me. Because we can't do it within the last 15, 20 minutes of the program. But I want to share with you portions of debates that they had when they knew that this subject was coming up. One of the people that was involved in the debates all during that time was Frederick Douglass. But I want to read to you a couple of the comments that was made by elected officials. And then the act itself, which was law. Frederick Douglass made a speech to the Anti-Slavery Society in Philadelphia, and it was during the Civil War. It says, Frederick Douglass speaking here, "I am one of those who believes that it is the mission of this war to free every slave in the United States. I am one of those who believe that we should not consent to no peace which shall not be an abolition peace. I am, moreover, one of those who believe that the work of the American Anti-Slavery Society would not be completed until the black man of the South and the black men of the North shall have been admitted fully, completely into the body politic of the United States of America. I look upon slavery as going the way of all the earth. It is the mission of this war to put it down. I know it will be said that I ask you to make the black man a voter in the South. It is said that the colored man is ignorant, and therefore he shall not vote. In saying this, you lay down a rule for the black man that you apply to no other class of your citizens. If he knows enough to be hanged, he knows enough to vote. If he knows enough, if he knows the difference between an honest man and a thief, he knows much more than some of our white voters. He knows enough to take up arms in defense of this government and to bare his breast to the storm of rebel artillery. He knows enough to vote. All I ask, however, in regard to the black man, is that whatsoever rule you adopt, whether of intelligence or wealth, as a condition of voting for whites, you shall apply it equally to the black man. Do that, and I am satisfied, and eternal justice is satisfied. Liberty, equality are satisfied, and the country will move forward in harmony." Now, that was Douglass. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a portion of Lincoln speech. Wait a minute, hold on a second. I'm getting no interference. Here's a portion of Lincoln's speech on April 11th, 1865. "It is unsatisfactory to some to know that the elective franchise is not given to the colored man. I would myself prefer that it was, that it were now conferred only to intelligent colored men and those who have served as soldiers. So the great emancipator, the supposed friend of black people, really wasn't in favor of not only blacks joining the Civil War until the whites was getting their behinds, until the North was getting their behinds kicked, but really wasn't in favor of giving them voting rights to blacks.
Right.
He said he would like to give it to intelligent blacks. So he was making that determination of who's intelligent, who's not. Now, Solomon P. Chase, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at that time, wrote a letter to Abraham Lincoln in response to his speech that he made in Washington 2 days earlier. His letter came on April 11th, 1865. And a portion he wrote says, "Once I should have been, if not satisfied, at least partially contented with the suffering for the intelligent and those who have been soldiers." You're talking about blacks. "Now I am convinced that the universal suffrage is demanded by sound policy and impartial justice. I shall return to Washington in a day or two, and perhaps it will be, not be disagreeable to you to have the whole subject talked over." So this thing, since we've been here in this country, it's always been a debate on dealing with black people. In these halls of the highest annals of government, it's always been the discussion about you. So
how to control?
Exactly. How are we going to do this? Claude Anderson alludes to that when he talks about when they formed this Constitution, how they sat there and made sure that they would never mention the word slavery. It's always a slick debate on how we got to deal with this. So after he went back to Washington and they fashioned this agreement and Lincoln was murdered, they were still dealing with this. Now, this letter, this portion of the letter that Lincoln wrote and this Chief Justice at the time was in April 11th, 1865. Here we go. Fast forward a little bit till February 8th, 1866. Andrew Johnson is now the president after Lincoln is murdered. Johnson wrote a letter to Benjamin B. French, the Commissioner of Public Buildings. And his portion says, "Everyone would and must admit that the white race is superior to the black race. And while that we ought to do our best to bring them up to our present level, that in doing so, we should at the same time raise our own intellectual status so the relative position between the two races stay the same." So, in response to that debate that Lincoln was having, even after he was killed, and his predecessor takes it up, they're still dealing with this. How are we going to word this? How we got to fashion this so we still keep our same status? Now, this was a letter that he wrote to Benjamin B. French in February 8th, 1866. Now, here it is, March 27th, 1866, the same year. Andrew Johnson vetoed the civil rights bill that had been passed by Congress in all their debates. It took a year for them to fashion this. This was his response to vetoing the bill. It says the bill, in effect, proposes a discrimination against a large number of intelligent, worthy, and patriotic foreigners, means white, and in favor of the Negro, to whom, after long years of bondage, the avenues of freedom and intelligence have just now been suddenly opened. He must, of necessity, from his previous unfortunate condition of servitude, be less informed as to the nature and character of our institutions. Coming from abroad, has to some extent at least, familiarize himself with the principles of government to which he has voluntarily entrusted life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So his answer was, I'm vetoing this bill because it's discriminatory against, as he stated, intelligent, worthy, and patriotic foreigners. That means whites coming into this country. The same language that they're talking about now. It's the same debate. Now, even though he vetoed the bill as the president at the time, the act did pass. Now, I want to read the act, and then you'll see what the hell did they have this huge debate and pass the Civil Rights Act of 1864 and the Voting Rights Act. What was that for? Another big charade? Because when this bill passed in 1866, this was the Civil Rights Act. It says the Civil Rights Act of 1866 was passed by Congress on April 9th, 1866, over the veto of President Andrew Johnson. The act declared that all persons born in the United States are now citizens with regard to race, color, or previous condition. As a citizen, they could make and enforce contracts, or sue and be sued, give evidence to court, and inherit, purchase, and sell, and hold and convey real estate and personal properties. Persons who denied these rights to former slaves were guilty of a crime and upon conviction faced a fine not exceeding $1,000 or imprisonment not excluding 1 year or both. The activities of organizations such as the Ku Klux Klan undermined the workings of this act, and it failed to guarantee the civil rights of African Americans. So according to this Civil Rights Act of 1866, you became a citizen. Mm-hmm. All of the rights of a citizen is yours. Mm-hmm. There is no need for a Civil Rights Bill of 1964 or a Voting Rights Act. It was all a charade. This act was on the books and it was a law. They never enforced it. They never intended to enforce it. And then they bolstered it, because Scotty Reed talks about this in an editorial that he does, and I'm going to play it sometime on our program. They bolstered that Civil Rights Act of 1866 with an Enforcement Act of 1871, and I'll read that Enforcement Act. The Enforcement Act of 1871, coupled with the Civil Rights Act of 1871, also known as the Ku Klux Klan Act, the Third Enforcement Act, or the Ku Klux Klan Act, is an act of the United States Congress which empowered the president to suspend the writ of habeas corpus to combat the Ku Klux Klan. The act was passed by the 42nd United States Congress and signed into law by President Ulysses S. Grant on April 20th, 1871. The act was the last of three enforcement acts passed by the United States government from 1870 to 1871 during the Reconstruction era to combat attacks upon the rights of African Americans. So Congress passed a bill to battle domestic terrorists, which was the Klan, to help bolster the 1866 Civil Rights Act, which gave blacks the right to vote, the civil rights, and everything else. They never enforced either one of those. In fact, the Klan member, the government officials were Klan members and Klan sympathizers the same way they are now. So what's really the difference? We keep playing these musical chairs with this man. You know how you played musical chairs when you was a kid? You dance around, and then the music stops, and you might end up sitting on the floor. Well, we've been sitting on the floor after the music been stopping. Because we don't seem to understand who we're dealing with.
And you know, Elliot, to add to that, I think the shift that occurred, and I'm only using the Wikipedia, is the Tillman-Hayes Compromise, right, of 1877. Right, now you stopped.
I didn't read that part. Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, the compromise was purported informal, unwritten deal that settled the intense dispute of 1876 U.S. presidential election. It resulted in the United States federal government pulling back the last troops out of the South and formally ending the Reconstruction era through the compromise. Republican Ruthur B. Hayes was awarded the White House over Democratic Samuel J. Tillman on the understanding that Hayes would remove the federal troops whose support was essential to the survival of the Republican governments in South Carolina, Florida, and Louisiana. The compromise involved Democrats who controlled the House of the Representatives, allowing the decision of the Electoral Commission to take effect. The outgoing president, Republican Ulysses S. Grant, removed the soldiers from Florida as President Hayes removed the remaining troops from South Carolina. Because in order to do that enforcement that you read, right, mm-hmm. they needed troops, right?
Yes.
Because they had a terrorist group, right, that they were, they recognized that terrorist group existed. And we talk about that terrorist group, and Pennsylvania has, I understand, one of the largest contingents today,
mm-hmm.
right? The outgoing president, I mean, the Democrats took control. The Democrats took control. So those were, they make a distinction, right? The Democrats of today ain't those Democrats of then, right? These is...
No, they just switched it around. Yeah. switched it around.
They already dominated most of other state governments in the South. What was exactly agreed is somewhat consensus on the documents is scanty. Black Republicans felt betrayed as they lost power and were subject to discrimination and harassment to suppress their voting. At the turn of the 20th century, most Black people were effectively disfranchised by state legislators in every Southern state, despite being a majority in some. And that, I think that's what they call Jim Crow.
Now, the reason I didn't read that portion, Richard, because what you were stating was historically very accurate, but it was, those were like handshake agreements.
Right.
They weren't constitutionally passed laws.
Right.
I mean, those were handshake. Okay, I'll pull the troops out. You do what you want to them Black. Those were handshake agreements. But I'm talking about the law that was passed in 1866, mm-hmm. and then they turn around and duplicate another law in 1964, but leaved all kind of loopholes where other people could benefit. See, that law in 1866 said specifically that it was dealing for Black people, period.
Mm-hmm.
This law that they passed in 64 was another, let's go in the doors and try to make, let's screw these people again. And then they screwed our people where gays, white women, everybody else benefits, but you don't. That law in 1866 specifically said you were supposed to get certain things. You. It had language in there saying African Americans and people that have been in servitude in this country.
There you go.
Yeah, so come on. Well, listen, that's why we share this information. It's not like it's a secret. All these things is public information. You can get there. And then when you discover these things, then you talk about them. Talk about them in your church, your religious organization. You need to spend more time talking about these issues so that people know what we're up against.
And that's why you have Time for Awakening, so people can use this platform, this forum, this moment, especially in these here open forum, to be able to share that, I believe.
Yeah, well, listen to you. Spend some time talking about these things so we can, our people can get off their knees howling and screaming for help when the Almighty, the people, the spirit that created heaven and earth has given you the help. He's given you a mind to use. We keep looking like somebody's going to come out the sky and ride in a chariot and deliver people. Come on. It ain't never happened like that. It's always been conscious individuals that have turned the table on these things. And it's going to be like this again. Let's try to grab one more before we leave the air. 267, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Brother Joe. Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. You know, Brother Elliot, what you echoing, Brother Elliot, is the teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know, we look for that pie in the sky God, or as Minister Farrakhan say, we look for that benevolent white person. Some of us still... Whether some of us want to admit it or not, we're still looking for some pie in the sky, like you say, wonder bread going to drop out the sky and stuff like that. If you don't plant the harvest and harvest the wheat, you ain't getting no damn bread. You know, you ain't no loaf of bread going to fall out the sky. And the same thing with white folks. Some of us in our brainwash, we still think some benevolent white man or white woman is going to save us. Ain't happening. If it ain't happen all these years, it sure ain't gonna happen now, especially in this era of the idiot that's in the White House now. That's already gonna get even worse and worse. So I mean, so we looking for that. We definitely fooling ourselves, you know. Clearly fooling ourselves. So, you know, what you saying, Elliot and Brother Rich, is spot on, man. You know, it's time for us to roll up our sleeves and get to work. Like I said, this is the time for the black man and woman to strike out on their own, because white America is so disorganized. The dumb wit in the White House, he done further eroded America's standing. Not that he had great standing in the world, but this guy done further eroded America's standing. This is the time for the black man and black woman to strike out is now. You know, the time is now. I can't be more clear than that, Brother Ellen and Brother Richard. The time is now.
There you go.
No.
Well.
What was that, Brother Ellen?
No, I agree with you.
You know, and I just want to, you know, say one more time, it was, like I said, Sister Sarah, it was like the honor meeting her in Dallas, you know, this past week, man, and breaking bread with Sister Sarah. She's a beautiful African-American sister, man. She's conscious. She loves our people, man. It was an honor for meeting her down in Dallas, man, and I just hope that, you know, she can come up to the Philly area one day soon so she can meet you, Brother Elliot, you, Brother Richard, and Brother Ralph, and all the other sisters and brothers in the Time for the Awakening and Listen audience. I mean, she's good people, man. She's very good people, Elliot. And again, y'all brothers, keep doing what you're doing, man. And hey, and last point, Elliot, you know, you got the president, you know, the Demwood president, you know, telling law enforcement, you know, to rough up people. You know, he ain't say black, but you know what we meant. And not that them devils need any more encouragement when it comes to, you know, harassment and mistreating black people. So he just further fanned the flames of racism. And then, of course, with this attack on affirmative action, that's beginning to get white folks fired up and say, oh, these Negroes and stuff, they're getting in the schools over your white daughter and your white son, and they unqualified. You know, this guy, he sure know how to stir the pot. But, you know, and I my last point, Elliot and Richard, never knows what white folks, when they complain about affirmative action, there's always some black person, mainly, or some so-called minority that they say that they got an advantage over them. They never said that some unqualified white boy or white girl got in over them. It didn't deserve it. It's always somebody black they blame. You know what I mean? You ever notice that, Elliot and Richard?
Yeah, well, I don't know where these blacks are that's getting these positions and all over white folks that are qualified. I don't know where they are. Maybe they can start pointing them out.
Elliot, I would like to point it out to us. When I look at all these Fortune 500 companies, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, all over America, you got a few token Negroes that's head of some of these, but for the most part, they still ran by majority white males, in some cases white women. You know what I mean, Elliot?
Yeah, and listen, when those, as you call them, token Negroes get those jobs, they don't change the dynamic or the hiring practices of those companies.
No, they don't.
If their hiring practices was to hire 80, 90% white folks, when these people get to be CEOs or making decisions, they might not be CEOs, but decision-making, you know, in those companies, they don't change the hiring practices. It's still the same. But their face will be on Black Enterprise magazine, or their face will be on Ebony or whatever, as somebody you're supposed to be proud of.
Exactly. All that nigga doing is he looking out for himself. Like you said, they reach back and try to help their people out so you can be something to be proud of. But why don't we have some nigga at some white company? All he doing is making money benefiting himself. He ain't benefiting my people or myself, you know? Hey. But Elliot?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yes, yeah. Well, brother, my phone probably giving shit off right now. But Elliot and Richard, thanks for the time, my brother and y'all brothers. Keep up the good work, and I'll inshallah check y'all out on Sunday evening.
All right, Joe. Talk to you.
Thanks, brother Elliot. Thanks, brother Richard.
Richard, coming up on the end of another program. And listen, I want to reiterate to the listening audience, we won't be doing that live broadcast tomorrow. Because the logistics of the park won't allow us to be able to broadcast in the area that we need to be at. So we'll have to forego that, but it'll be other opportunities and other things that we'll be doing in the coming months that, you know, will be exciting for our listening audience to hear.
Yes, Lord.
That's it for this evening, Brother Richard.
Yes.
I want to thank the listening audience for being with us this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on